Okay, we're going to go ahead and start our class. We are continuing our study in the visions of God. We're getting close, people. We are in chapter 20 of Revelation, and there are only 22 chapters. And sometimes, you know, the time periods, chapters in the Bible are arbitrary, right? They're not scriptural. The chapter markings and the verse numbers and the chapter numbers are not put there by the Holy Spirit. Okay, they were put there by a guy back in the Middle Ages who was traveling. As the legend goes, he was traveling, had to travel back and forth from one place to another, and he was reading the scriptures. And every time he fell off his horse, he put another verse or chapter in the boundary. But that's just a legend. But you know, somebody put numbers, organized them into numbers, so they could be referenced, so you could say, oh, where is that? Oh, it's in Isaiah. Well, Isaiah is a big book, right? You can read a long time trying to find it again. Hi, Isaiah. my grandson. I'll probably say that a few times today. You'll be hearing that all day. So sometimes, chapter markings are put in appropriate places where there's a major change in thought. Right? And it's kind of an organizational thing. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're put in a place where you shouldn't stop reading when you get to the end of the chapter. You need to keep on reading to get the full meaning. And so when we look at the chapters, but one of the things that's interesting about Revelation, for the most part, the chapters are fairly well organized. And the time periods associated with these chapters, how much action, how much time is passing, is interesting. And I don't mean in the sense of, you know, was it 100 years or 500 years or 10 days or something. I'm talking about the action in the scene. Right? If you go back to the first chapter where Jesus shows up in his glorified state and the seven candles, lampstands, and the seven stars in his hand, that all happens pretty quick, right? You don't get this idea that this is a lot of time. And the action is described in great detail. And then when we talk about the throne scene in chapter 4, you get the idea that, you know, there's some singing and praising going on, but it's still a relatively short time span, and it's described fairly richly. Then you get to some of these other chapters where, like, for instance, we had this chapter, we're in chapter 20 now, so chapter 18, with the fall of the great harlot, Rome, Babylon the Great, is described in great detail. Last chapter, chapter 19, we heard of the big battle that didn't happen, right? The big battle with the devil gets the sea beast and the earth beast, it's also called the false prophet. And all their buddies, their client kings, and all their armies, and they all come to fight against the king on the white horse, Jesus, and his army. And great big battle, right? Lightsabers and swords and cannons and nuclear... No. Poof! They get ready, you think the battle's about ready to happen, and what does it say? And the beast was taken, and thrown in the lake of fire. Poof! And the rest were slain by the rider with the sword that proceeds out of his mouth. In other words, there ain't no fighting going on. There's judgment going on. Execution. Now, a couple of keys as we roll into chapter 20. Chapter 20 starts with, "Then I saw." Right? And anytime we see those are temporal clues in sequence. Then I saw this, then I saw that, then I saw this, then I saw that, right? We hear that all through. Or then this happened, and then that happened. Now, chapter 20 is so packed, full of action. There are three major elements of chapter 20. Satan being bound for 1,000 years, the 1,000-year reign, I'm sorry, four, the last battle, and the great white throne judgment scene. Whew! I mean, you read this chapter, And you have to stop and take a breath occasionally. Even I do. It is packed full of action. Lots of stuff happens here in just a few verses. Now, we have seen, before we get into it, we have seen Satan and his allies. Okay, Satan is also called, this is the chapter where we're going to hear it, the dragon, who's also called the devil and Satan. Right? Same thing. We've seen him continually try to thwart the plan of God. When did he start thwarting the plan of God?
In the beginning of time.
In the Garden of Eden. Genesis chapter 3, verse, everybody ought to know this, 15 is where God says, after he's tempted Eve, he says, her seed, Christ, is going to crush your head. We're getting to the head crushing. It's taken the whole book, but we're getting to the head crushing. This chapter is the head crushing, right here. Okay? Now, Satan's been after this the whole time. In fact, in this chapter, it says that he goes out and tries to deceive the world again. This is his MO, his modus operandi. He is a deceiver. Jesus said that. What did he say? He's a liar
and a murderer
from the beginning. He's all about lying and murdering. That's what he does. Now, he's had a bunch of allies. In the book of Revelation, we have seen these allies. Some of them are still around in this time period that we're reading about to read about. Some have already bit the dust. So in chapter 12, what did we have? The glorious woman and the great red dragon, right? And the glorious woman and the great red dragon, the dragon shows up, tries to devour the woman's child. She says she's with child. She has a child who's to rule nations with a rod of iron, who's caught up to heaven. That's Jesus. The dragon misses that chance. Strike one. Okay? Then he goes after the woman. And God gives the woman two wings of an eagle to fly off in a place for times, time, and half a time. To be protected. Strike two. So he goes and makes war in heaven with Michael and his angels. The devil and his angels, the angels that have left their place. These were not created wicked angels. These were angels who were created like all other angels who chose to follow Satan. Yes?
Don't forget about the devil's thing, sending water over it and open up the earth.
Yeah, that's when he tried to get at the woman. Right? So he tried to get at the woman. So he tried to get her child, tried to get the woman. He recruits a bunch of angels to go to war in heaven. They lose. They're gone. Okay? The devil gets another strike. Like I said, this isn't baseball. He's got a couple more to go. Then, oh, I forgot the harlot. We got the harlot, Babylon the Great. The harlot is judged. Thank you, Lord, for judging and avenging the great harlot, the answer to 6:9. She's out. The last chapter, the beasts are defeated and their client kings, the puppet kings, they're out. Satan's ally, the harlot, is gone. He strikes out again. The beasts are gone. The client kings are gone. He's only got a few allies left. As we're going to find out in this chapter, the only two allies he has left is basically a global army, and we'll talk about it. It says, over the whole earth, what does it mean, okay? It goes by the name of Gog and Magog, and you should recognize that from Ezekiel chapter 38-39. And death and Hades has been the ally of Satan ever since what? He's a murderer from the beginning. He's a merchant of death. And until Christ rose from the dead, who had the power of death?
Satan.
Who was in control of Hades? Yeah. What does it say? When Jesus died and he said he descended and then he ascended and led captivity captive. You remember that verse? He led captivity captive. He said, these people, I mean, the devil no longer had control. So his ally had been disabled at least. Now, so he's running out of chances, isn't he? And we're going to see the end of it all in this chapter. Okay? But there's one more big event that's going to happen that he's involved in. But some really interesting stuff. Now, the next big thing that's going to be talked about in this chapter 20 is what's generally called the thousand-year reign. And I want you to pay close attention when we're reading it, because I'm going to read the whole chapter through just so you can get the sweep of the whole chapter. Okay? Pay attention when it talks about, when you hear thousand, you're going to hear it in a couple different places. You're going to hear it in binding of Satan. You're going to hear about a group of people reigning with Christ for 1,000 years, and it says that after the 1,000 years are completed, Satan's going to be loose. I want you to pay attention to who is reigning, where are they reigning, and for how long. Okay? Then, when we get to the end, I want you to pay attention to some references. You're going to hear a reference to the first resurrection, and you're going to hear a reference to the second death. Okay? I want you to listen for those keywords as I read the chapter, and then we'll dive in and study it. This has a lot of stuff in it. I don't know if we'll get it done today, but I want you to get a sweep of the whole chapter. This all happened in one chapter. Now, everything we've done up until this point is context for this. All right, here we go. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till the 1,000 years were finished. But after these things he must be released for a little while. And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus and for the word of God, and who had not worshipped the beast or his image or received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. But the rest of the dead did not live again until the 1,000 years were finished. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such the second death has no power. But they shall be priests of God and of Christ, and shall reign with him 1,000 years. Now when the 1,000 years have expired, Satan will be released from his prison and will go out to deceive the nations which are in the four corners of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, whose number is as the sand of the sea. They went up on the breadth of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints in the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them. The devil who deceived them was cast in the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they shall be tormented day and night forever and ever. Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his works. Then death and Hades were cast in the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. 15 verses. Whew! You get the feeling you could probably work on this one for a month or two? 15 verses. Lots of action. The climax of the book, okay? Remember the main thrust of the organization of the book of Revelation. The first chapter was Jesus appearing to John saying, I've got some messages for things that must what? Shortly come to pass. The letters of seven churches, his messages to the current congregations, chapters 2 and 3. The throne room scene, the opening of the seven seals of the scroll, God's tools, his power, the seven trumpets, God's warnings against Rome for what they're doing, the bowls, the seven bowls of wrath, God's judgment against them, and then God ticking off the enemies. up until we get to 19, where the souls under the altar back in chapter 6, verse 9, that cried out, "How long, O Lord, are you going to wait to judge and avenge?" In chapter 19, it says, "Thank you, O Lord, because you have judged and avenged." So we know that whole middle section of the book was a judgment of Rome. Now, Rome in all these things, and if you're visiting today, we have some visitors. The book of Revelation, we've been studying the visions of God. So we've been studying all of the visions of God from the very first one in Genesis all the way through the book. It's taken us almost 2 years. Lots of figurative things. Lots of images. The key we've been using to understand this is a little mechanism that Stafford North used when he taught the class. He said, here's what it says on the surface, and here's what it means. So it says, great red dragon. But it means the devil or Satan, right? It says that. You know, in a little while it's going to say the bride, the Lamb's wife. Is that a real woman? Is it just one woman? No. It's the church. We know that because the rest of the scripture in the New Testament says the church is the bride of Christ. So we know that. So in all of this, we're seeing lots of big pictures here. But I want to keep in mind, it's a highly figurative book. Now, first thing you run into, verse 1. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years and cast him in the bottomless pit and shut him up and put a seal over him so that he should deceive the nations no more until 1,000 years were finished. But after these things, he must be released for a little while. Okay, here we go. First of all, an angel shows up. Where's he coming from?
Heaven.
What's he got? He's got two things. He's got a key to the bottomless pit. But the bottomless pit showed up a couple of times. Remember? The bottomless pit came up where the angel Abaddon, his name is Abaddon or Apollyon in Greek, shows up and the locusts come from there. Remember the locusts, the locust plague and the trumpets? Right? This is not a nice place down in that pit. Okay? But who's in control of it? An angel from heaven has the key. Satan doesn't have a key. He's not in control of it. In fact, you know something else. What happens with the great chain?
He binds Satan.
Who does?
The angel.
The angel that showed up. Hold on a second. I thought Satan was this great, almighty, powerful angel that was powerful. Hold it. Another angel shows up with a chain and whoops him, ties him up. This is a really important point.
There's an angel from heaven.
He's a strong dude. The point is, a lot of times in our culture, we paint this picture of Satan as this almost equal to God in power kind of being. Nowhere close.
Yeah,
It's just an angel.
Not a Michael.
Not a really super duper, you know, extra powerful an angel. The point is, remember, we talked about ways of summarizing the whole book of Revelation, right? One of them is God is in control, period. Another one is God's people win, right? Here's the case. God is in control, period. So the angel shows up, he ties up Satan, and he throws him in the bottomless pit, and he puts a seal over the bottomless pit, locks him up. Now, why does he do this? What's the stated purpose? So he cannot deceive the nations anymore. Until how long? 1,000 years are completed. So whatever this time period of 1,000 years is, and we're going to talk about it, there is a period of time where Satan will not be allowed to do things that he had done before. And in fact, it says, we read the whole chapter, so you know the answer. He says, and then he must be loose for a little season after 1,000 years. What's he going to go out and do? It says, when he's loose from his prison, what does he do? He goes out and deceives the nations again. This is what he does. He's a liar. A liar and a murderer.
Same game plan.
Same game. He always has the same game plan. Now, so, one, he's being bound for a specific purpose. Does this mean that Satan has no ability to interact in the world for 1,000 years? No. What does it say? He's bound so he cannot deceive the nations. Is he still tempting people during the time that he's bound? Yep. Does he still have influence? Sure. But he cannot deceive the nations. What was he doing before? Remember, he deceived the nations. How do we end up with Rome, with the sea beast and the earth beast? How do we end up with that? Because the emperors of Rome did what? They went out and conquered, and then they put their puppet kings in place who were their allies, the client kings, the ten horns on the beast, right? We've talked about that. So we had all of this. So he cannot deceive the nations anymore. So you're not, during this time period, however long it is, we'll talk about it, you're not going to have any kind of global Satan marshaling, you know, the nations of the world to go after the church. But because, by the way, who at the end, what is this army that he goes out and deceives and creates? Where do they go? They compass the breadth of the earth, they group, and they surround the camp of God's people and the beloved city. Okay? So we know who they're going to fight against, or they think they're going to fight against. Now, let's talk about 1,000 years. Every time we've had, almost every time we've had numbers in this book, they've been figurative. When he says the letters of seven churches, we know those are really seven because he says, here they are, Ephesus, Smyrna, Thyatira, Laodicea, Philadelphia, etc., 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 right? When it says time, times at half a time, or 1,260 days, or 42 months, talking about the same period of time, but not a literal calendar time. He's talking about the period of intense persecution. And it shows up in all those different ways. The other numbers we show up, 12. 12 shows up, the number of the tribes, the number of the apostles, it's God's people. 144,000 show up, what's that? 12 times 12 times 1,000. All of God's people, really, really all of them. Okay, let's look at that number 1,000. In Hebrew numerology and in the Bible's numerology, anytime you raise something to a power, by that I mean multiply it by itself, you're adding a superlative to the description. Like good, better, best. Okay? So if you were thinking about this in literary terms, you would say better is 10 times good, best is 10 times better. And so if I said 1,000, it would be like saying best, like good, better, best. Okay, 10 times 10 times 10.
Since 10 usually represents complete.
Yeah.
Then it's complete perfection.
Well, it's completeness in the sense of the whole amount.
Yes.
And we looked at the seven. Sevens are used for perfection. They're perfect numbers because they can't be divided. Right? It's the largest number on your hands that can't be divided anymore. You know, it's a prime number. And the sevens show up. But the 10 means full count, right? Why? Because we have 10 fingers. Everybody understands. You got all 10, you got the full count. So if I said 10 times 10 times 10, what am I saying? Really, really, really the full count. All of it. Absolutely all of it. Nothing left. So here he says, I'm going to bind him 1,000 years. Now, man, is there a lot of different interpretations of this verse. This is where people come up with the 1,000-year reign. This is the only place it comes up. And people want to say, especially people who believe in a school of thought called premillennialism, which pre-millennium, okay, 1,000 years, they believe we are living before the 1,000-year reign. That's what premillennialism comes from. Okay? They believe that there's going to be a period of intense persecution somewhere between, well, 7 years, absolutely literal 7 years. And there's going to be a rapture of all the saints are going to get taken away. Then there's going to be horrible, horrible things. All these things we heard about in the trumpets and the bowls of wrath happening on the earth physically. Nuclear holocaust, great armies, 200 million Chinese invading the Holy Land, all kinds of things. We've talked about all this. And then they say that Jesus is going to come back and establish a throne in Jerusalem and sit on the throne in the temple and be there for 1,000 literal years with Christians with him for 1,000 years. Now, that's not what the book says. That's not what the book says. They've taken all those things that were figurative and tried to force fit them into literal. And you'll never find, really, in fact, every book I've ever read, they don't even agree with each other about what the interpretation of it is. But this is a place where everybody goes off on Jesus coming back to earth and reigning for 1,000 years. So, this 1,000 years is important. Remember when we had times, times, and half a time, 42 months and 1,260 days, the same time period described three different ways? It always represented a time of intense persecution of God's people. It represented a period of time where Satan's forces were, and his allies were allowed by God to exercise their power. Right?
And that's just it. It represents a period of time.
Right.
Because time means nothing to God.
Because he's eternal.
Days and years.
And you know, Peter says something about that.
Right.
A day with the Lord is as 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day. Which means that time, God experiences time and deals with time way different than we do. We deal with time like this, you know, one line, past, future, and here we are. God is sitting here looking at all of it, all at once. And so it's very different. Now, let's continue. So,